Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The first three games,
it's the leg, guys. Watch the leg.
Oh my God.
The follow through on the foot gets you in trouble every time.
And that's the second time that Green and, let's say, inadvertently.
What happened with the one with Draymond Green when he apparently kicked you?
That's exactly what happened before, mate. He's pretty accurate, that guy. So, yeah, mate, so, yeah, we'll see.
See, but that really seemed to kickstart you guys. Sorry.
No, here we go with the
someone
with a pun. Unbelievable.
I thought it was inadvertent. There's contact on the play. I was shocked they even looked at it. I mean, there's inadvertent contact all the time on plays, so that really surprised me.
Would you be stunned, or would you think it's unfair if the NBA does look at that as a possible suspension?
Oh, I would think they would rescind it.
Sure, you want to have kids one day. I'm not trying to end that on the basketball court. That don't make sense. I brought the ball over the top this way. He fouled me. My leg went up. I mean, I know my court not strong enough to stop my leg halfway from wherever it was going. Like, I didn't know I hit him. Like I said, I thought it would get rescinded because I didn't, not trying to kick him. I was following through on the shot. My leg went up. No, I don't think I'll get suspended. I don't know how anyone could possibly say, I did that on purpose.
I haven't seen it, but I think it's intentional. And that's two times in the last two games. Can't keep kicking somebody in their private areas. He probably said he didn't do it on purpose, but I think from the way I look at it, it looks intentional to me.
It's called flailing. Players do it to sell the call to the officials to try to get the whistle. Once you flail, once you say to yourself, I'm a flail, it's kind of hard to stop it in mid-air. So he flailed. He did kick him, but I don't think he did it purposely.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the extravaganza. What is going on? Good Monday morning to you. Thank you for joining us at 10 minutes past the hour of 3, almost quitting time. Punch out at about 4, maybe 4:30, 5, depending on A, your job, and B, whether or not you want to get fired. You punch out too early? Yeah, you get the idea. I don't care if you're listening at work, if you're listening in the car, if you're listening at home, if you're listening laying outside, enjoying sunshine, whatever it is. Thanks for being a part of it. Be a part of it more personally by doing more than listening. Pick up ye phone and dial us up. Hit us up right here at 866-240-1065. We've got a lot of things to talk about today, most of them NBA related. Not a whole lot of newsworthy stuff going on for the baseball teams we like to cover the most for you, which, of course, are Tigers and Indians. Tigers have won 6 out of 7. That in itself is newsworthy, but it's 6 out of 7. A lot of them are against teams you should beat, like the Twins, and quite frankly, if they win today, they'll be back at 500, and that's not a whole lot of what I would call newsworthy or noteworthy stuff. Indians, swept 4 from the Reds, a team they should and did, and that's fantastic, then lost 2 out of 3 to Boston. So just not a whole lot going on there. Most of the news today comes from the NBA. The two conference finals, and then with one notable exception, and that is some NFL news that perhaps you were listening to Russillo and Cannell talking about a little bit just in the last hour or so. Maybe you heard Mike and Mike talking about that a little bit this morning as well, and Lebatard and whatever. But there is a story in the NFL that is brewing that, once again, does not make the league look bad, or look good, beg your pardon. And unfortunately, because if the NFL doesn't look good, all of football doesn't come off looking good. And that is where I have my problem. Because these idiots, money conscious, first, second, last, and always, that they end up making the entire sport look bad at every level, including youth. And they then go ahead and influence moms, nervous, jittery, walking on eggshell moms, to say, no, you're not playing football, son. I don't care how much you like it. It's not good. They look at the NFL and their entire perspective changes. So that is the other, the only real non-NBA story that we're going to hit today. And we invite you to do it, like I said. Matter of fact, I would say do it quickly because we've got two guests in the middle of the show today, in the middle of our 2 hours together, coming up at 3:35 NBA from the Raptors' perspective as Toronto and Cleveland go at it in Game 4 tonight up in Toronto. So we're going to talk to our friend John Godis from Raptors HQ, a part of SB Nation. That'll be at 3:35. Then at 4:05, naturally, we'll get the visiting team's perspective. Rick Noland, who is, of course, a tremendous Cavaliers beat writer and a frequent contributor to this program, he will be joining us. We're going to cover the Eastern Conference Finals and ask them about the Draymond kick and ask them about the Steven Adams situation and ask them about the Western Conference Final all over. So that is coming up at 3:35 and 4:05, respectively. So best time for calls today are basically now and at the end of the show. Bookends to the show, that's what you can do. So if you want to get in on any of those issues, NBA or that NFL story, or even, I mean, if you have a baseball comment, like I said, I'm looking for an angle that's interesting to talk about. Not a whole lot right now. All right, so we do welcome you to the program, 866-240-1065. Twitter and Facebook, too. Make sure you hit us up there. All our tweeting is done from Sports Radio 1065. That's the Twitter handle, Sports Radio 1065. On Facebook, you can comment to us there on anything that's on your mind at 1065 The Ticket. So I'm Bob France, and Jim Cushlin is here as well. What's going on, Cush? How you feeling, big dog?
Feeling pretty good today. Feeling pretty good. Looking forward to Game 4 tonight.
I put the question up on Twitter about an hour and a half ago, maybe something like that, just to see what people think as they get around to getting to their Twitter feeds today as they get off work. Should Draymond Green be suspended for Game 4 tomorrow night or not? Simple question, yes or no, but then, of course, provide the why. What is your argument? And we want to get as many people as possible to vote for that. So find us on Twitter, share it, and retweet it yourself when you see that little tiny poll there. It's just very simple. We just want to get some different perspectives on it. And, Kush, you're up first.
All right.
Even if you don't vote on it online, should he be suspended for a game or not? You've probably heard all the arguments today. I've heard all the arguments. You heard Steve Kerr.
Mm-hmm.
You heard Draymond. You heard Steven Adams. You heard Russell Westbrook. You heard Shaquille O'Neal. There's many, many more. I was watching a little bit of First Take this morning after Mike and Mike, and you got a split there. Skip Bayless says absolutely suspend him. Stephen A. Smith says no way do you suspend him. What does Jim Cushlin say?
I say yes, you do. And the reason for me is you can't look at this, the incident from last night, in a vacuum. And I don't think it was intentional. I kind of don't. But the reason I'm saying yes, Bob, is if you think back about 24 hours ago, what story did we come across? It won't mean anything for tonight's game, but Dejounte Jones got suspended for Game 4. For his low blow shot, also I think unintentional if you watch that video, from the very end of Game 3 on Bismack Biyombo in the Cavs-Raptors series. I don't think either were intentional, but if Dejounte Jones gets suspended for it, the NBA's got to be consistent, don't they?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know if that's how that would play out or not. What I would say about that is, I don't think that there is the comparison can be made between Jones against Biyombo and Draymond Green against Steven Adams. And the reason why is because of what happened previously with Draymond Green and Steven Adams in Game 2 of their series. That was a big deal to me. The fact that he has done this not once but twice.
Right.
Or as Steven Adams says,
happened before, mate. He's pretty accurate there, guy.
He was asked about it. He said, well, it's happened before, mate. He's pretty accurate there, guy. In other words, if it's totally accidental / incidental and his feet just come up, he comes up and kind of kicks out as he's finishing a shot, then okay, I guess, but both times right square in the nards?
Right.
I mean, you know what I mean? We're talking about kicking a man in the groin not once but twice. What are the odds of that? I'm not saying for certain that we know his intent, but I just think that, and I'm no MIT scientist, not proclaiming to be, won't play one on the radio, but I will say this. If you were to try to calculate the odds of that and get some of these high-level mathematicians in here that both of them would hit them square in the cherries, I think it would be pretty doggone low, those odds, that that would happen. And so to me, Draymond Green needs to be suspended not because Dante Jones got suspended for an inadvertent elbow or forearm or whatever you want to call it to Bismack Biyombo, but because of Draymond Green's own previous situation in which he did it to the same exact player.
Now, that's a good secondary point right there, Bob, and you saying it actually makes me even feel better about my position, because you're correct. This is the second time now that this something like this has happened, you know, involving Draymond Green and Stephen Adams specifically in this series. And, you know, and like I said, to me, if I take it in a vacuum, I even probably would give Draymond Green what he said when I played the montage there, and I'll play it again here in a second when I cue it up, of what he said as, you know, as a result of that. If I take that in a vacuum and give him the benefit of the doubt, yeah, that may change it, but I can't do that. You have the other incidents that have already happened between those two in that series, and I'm sorry. If the NBA is going to be any kind of consistent in how they rule on these things after the fact, because these kind of suspensions have to get ruled after the game, and Dejounte Jones got suspended for his, mind you, nobody called any kind of foul, because I think the official just wanted to get out of there because it was at the literal very end of that game. But if you suspend one guy for it, how can you not suspend the other without making me think, oh, comparison to ancient Simpsons. You know, this is America, Krusty. We don't send our celebrities to jail.
Well, and that's very well, nice reference, by the way. But that's but it's not just his celebrity status, obviously. It is the importance of that player to his particular series status.
Yeah, make no mistake.
Dejounte Jones doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be the first one to tell you, you won't see Dejounte Jones. You wouldn't have seen Dejounte Jones in Game 4 unless it's a blowout one way or another in garbage time. Yeah. I'll be the first to admit it. I'm just saying if they want to be consistent, they have to suspend both or suspend neither. Honestly.
Well, but again, I still think that's the wrong comparison because they're different circumstances. They really, really are. We have no point of reference on Jones. We have a lot of points of reference here on Green, particularly given the fact that the other one was just the game before. It's two straight games in which he has ended up kicking Stephen Adams right in the groin, or hitting Stephen Adams right in the groin, whether it was with the foot or anything else. So that is the real point of reference here. Then the second thing is who he is. Draymond Green is a troublemaker. Draymond Green, the Michigan State alum, favorite of Spartan fans, Draymond Green is not a good guy. What I mean by that is, if you recall, earlier in this season, about 6 months ago, right at the start of the season,
right,
Draymond Green pretty much announced that he's got a fund that he sets up within his own salary budgeted to pay for this number of technical fouls he planned to get. I mean, there's
well,
a story on it.
Kudos to him for planning ahead, I suppose.
I mean, I was just doing a little digging on him today, and I was trying to see, you know, what kind of rep, because, you know, I'd heard the stat. It was on Mike and Mike. I hope everybody listens to Mike and Mike each and every day right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. But I heard the reference that Draymond Green had the second most technical fouls in the NBA this year behind notorious hothead DeMarcus Cousins, the immature, sometimes over-emotional DeMarcus Cousins. So you're second in that regard. And then I wanted to see exactly how many fines he had racked up this season. You know, and last year, let me see if I – see, I don't have this year's. I just have last year. He was fined a total of $31,000 for tees last year in the regular season and the postseason. And I'm looking for this year's, and I haven't found it yet. But what I did find was the story that said Draymond Green – says that, and he, of course, just signed a 5-year, $82 million contract, that he has a budget from that dollar amount each year to pay for his fines because he plans on getting plenty of them. So that just says to me, this is a guy, Jim, that things don't happen incidentally to. This is a guy who he can't claim, you know, just complete coincidence that I happen to hit the same guy in the same place in two straight games. This is a guy who basically is admitting to premeditation, at least when it comes to illegal, unwarranted, unsportsmanlike behavior. He's admitted to premeditation that I'm going to do this. I know I'm gonna intentionally or not, I recognize it's gonna happen, get myself teed up, get myself ejected, get myself some fines, and I'm setting money aside to pay those things. I'm not going to play under control. I know me, and I'm gonna get out of control. So if this is a guy that has indicated premeditation and planning for bad behavior before, which he has at the beginning of the season, how am I to take him at his word and give him the benefit of the doubt today that that was just incidental, just like the one in game two? I don't know why it just keeps happening. It's such an unfortunate thing. You know, it's a guy who admits that he's going to plan to be unsportsmanlike and break rules and then pay the freight for it later on. I don't think that earns him the benefit of any doubt.
Well, and then we're going to have a fodder one way or another when they do make a decision, and the NBA is supposed to rule formally and announce that somewhere. I imagine it'll be sometime during our shows afternoon.
I would think so too. Yeah.
And if that ruling comes down, we'll let you know. Obviously, and also get the wonderful NBA conspiracy guys out there, because what are the two things that drive the best conspiracy theories, Bob, when it comes to the NBA? Draft lotteries and officiating. Are they fixing things? They're going to be out in full force if they don't suspend Green.
Yeah, those people are a-holes. I don't even like to give them the time of day. They're just a-holes, okay?
But at the same time, mentioned something perfectly, though, a few minutes ago. How important Draymond Green is to this team and what he does. I mean, Curry's still obviously the best player, but I still personally, Bob, feel in many ways part of that next step that the Warriors have taken these last couple years to be so dominant is partly centered around Green, and he will be a big, big loss for them if he's not able to play. And one does have to wonder how the NBA is going to do that, because it's, again, I know they're separate incidents, but it's one thing to, you know, suspend a bench player who only sees the light of day during blowouts, and it's another to suspend a centerpiece of a historical team.
Well, that's an interesting point, and it's been brought up many times today by a number of people, and I want to address that. Here's one of the people who brought it up. I told you about First Take today. One of the people who brought it up was Stephen A. Smith, who says there's no way that the NBA can or should suspend Draymond Green for Game 4. He said it just should not happen, and he doesn't want to see that.
I don't believe it was intentional. I don't believe he should be suspended, and I don't believe that the National Basketball Association should be pressured by people like you who are thinking like you, talking about, well, you suspended Dante Jones, so you got to suspend Draymond Green. Dante Jones was a punch, okay? And no, there's no reason why your fists are in the man's area up in there. First of all, I think people that do that, you should be arrested on sight, okay? Because there's certain things, Molly, you just don't do. You just don't do. As a man, you do. Punch somebody in the face before you do something like that, okay? You don't do that.
So it's okay for Draymond to haul off and kick him?
Well, I'm getting ready to take you. I believe, I watched the play, and I don't believe it's as flagrant as you say it is. I think it's very debatable. I saw him going up for the shot, get stripped, you understand what I'm saying? Feet kicked up, etc. I didn't see what you saw. Now, maybe there's something wrong with my eyes. I didn't see it at all. I didn't see malintent. I didn't see something that said to me, I'm trying to kick the dude in his man area. I didn't see that. I did not see anything, Skip, that says to me definitively, it was intentional.
And in related news, Stephen A. Smith is officially blind because to say that I didn't see anything that indicated intent when he got fouled and was already on the ground and took that right foot and kicked it up straight square in the groin, I didn't see anything that wasn't incidental. Now, he went on, did the blind Stephen A. Smith, he went on to say that he doesn't want the NBA influencing the outcome of the Western Conference Finals. And at Game 3, everyone agrees, you would agree, Jim, right, is a must-win for the Warriors. They're down 2-1, and if they lose Game 3 and they're down 3-1 to the Thunder, it doesn't matter that you have 73 wins in the regular season. Chances are you are finished. And if they lose Game 3... In Stephen A's mind, and fall down 3-1, that without Draymond Green being on the floor, then it will put an asterisk next to the game, to the series, and to Oklahoma State's triumph if they win not only that game but then the series, because Draymond Green is such a huge, huge part of what the Warriors do. My response to that, which is kind of my response to you talking about Draymond's influence and impact.
Mm-hmm.
It's twofold. One, Draymond Green in game three in the loss had an unbelievable, incomprehensible, unimaginable, probably won't be seen again number in the plus minus category of minus 43. That's right. The Warriors, the defending champions, with Steph Curry, the defending two-time MVP, All-Star Klay Thompson. Draymond Green was minus 43. The Warriors were 43 points to the bad while he was on the court. He couldn't shoot. He couldn't rebound. He couldn't do it. He was awful. I say that not to say it was one game in a vacuum and I'm going to apply it across the broader spectrum. But I am going to say he was also on the court during game one, in which the Oklahoma City Thunder took it to Golden State in Golden State's building at Oracle Arena and won on the road against a team that was virtually unbeatable at home in the regular season, against a team that was obviously playing with that history of 73 on their side, against a team that everybody just expects to waltz to the NBA Finals because they don't have to go through the mighty, mighty Spurs, who won 67 games. They went in there on the road, and Draymond Green didn't stop the Thunder from winning in Game 1. He didn't stop the Thunder from winning in Game 3. So for Stephen A. and others to say that there will be some sort of taint or some sort of asterisk or some sort of sidebar story that says if OKC wins Game 4 without Draymond Green, that it's now not as impressive of a victory because Draymond Green's presence doesn't indicate a guaranteed victory in any way, shape, or form. He was present in the first three, and he lost two of them.
Yeah.
So I don't want to hear that from anybody.
And that's a good thing, because somehow I don't think Stephen A., among others, puts an asterisk, and I don't either, by the way, on last year's Warriors title because of the Cavaliers that were injured in that series that we've all talked about for a year now. So that's number one. And number two, this whole incident is taken away from what should be one of the main things we're talking about when it comes to this West Finals. That is two out of three, I don't care home or road, where somebody has beaten a full-strength Warriors team. And this whole kicking in the man area incident is distracting from that very interesting fact.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think people are focusing on that story, too. This is going to be just for a little while until the suspension is announced or not announced. The announcement is made whether he's suspended or not. It's fresh. It's big, obviously. And every man who's a sports fan can empathize with Steven Adams. Anybody who has ever been kicked there, hit there, punched there, or even had your little toddler accidentally step there, you know what he went through. And you also know what an ultimate slap at a man's manhood, no pun intended, it is to do that to somebody. It's something we can all relate to. So it's dominating the storyline right now. But to me, Jim, it does not dominate the storyline of Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. No, that's not right. That's not right. Let me back up. Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. Let's get Batman in front of Robin because that's what it is, okay? Kevin Durant, 33. Russell Westbrook, 30. Kevin Durant with, I think, 10 out of 15 shooting. Boatload of rebounds. Russell Westbrook with the 30 points. He also shot extraordinarily well with 12 assists and was only two rebounds shy of a trip dub. 63 between those two dynamic superstars in a blowout that was just incomprehensible the way they played, particularly in the third quarter. This game was at 40-40 before the kick, before the field goal that Draymond Green tried to kick right through the uprights of Steven Adams. Then the Oklahoma City Thunder went on a run that was just a thing of beauty, something to behold. That's not lost on me, how bad they took it to him. I told you they would win game three at home. I told you I picked Oklahoma City in the series. I see no reason to back down from that, even whether Draymond Green is suspended for game four or not. I think Oklahoma City is going to win again, and then I think the onus is going to be on the Warriors to prove that they really want to defend their championship, because they are going to have to win three straight against this team with KD, Russell, Steven Adams, who isn't even playing as much anymore. Deion Waiters, who's getting big-time minutes. Randy Foy, who else, for crying out
Serge
loud?
Serge Ibaka.
Yeah, Serge Ibaka, who's kind of back in. He's getting a lot more of the minutes, by the way, that Steven has. Steven Adams only played 17 minutes.
Yeah.
As opposed to the 35 or so he had been playing in the first two games.
I know part of that's a matchup thing that Billy Donovan's trying to do.
That's a decision that Donovan is going with that is making, you know, having a great dividends, paying great dividends right now. But so I don't think that's going to happen. All right, we're going to get a timeout here because I'm already late. I want to get a break. Sports Center coming. We're going to go to the Eastern Conference Finals, talk about Raptors and Cavs. But we will continue the conversation with each of our guests, John Godis from Toronto, Rick Nolan from Cleveland, about what happened last night out in Oklahoma City and whether or not Draymond Green should be suspended. That announcement should come from the NBA, but probably before the end of the show today. And as soon as it happens, we'll let you know right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed. The Extravaganza continues now at 3:40 on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo sports leader, all things NBA right now. I mentioned we were going to be very guest-heavy in the middle of the program. We're going to get a Raptors perspective here in just a moment at 3:35. And then at 4:05, Rick Nolan, our friend from the Cleveland Cavaliers, he's a beat writer covering the Cavaliers for a couple of papers out that way, will join us to talk about things from the Cavs side after they suffered their first loss of the postseason in Game 3 a couple of nights ago. But before we do that, once again, what Draymond Green was saying, and we played his comments about the kick that may or may not end up having him suspended for Game 4 of the Western Conference Finals. What he said, very interestingly, was kind of backed up by one Shaquille O'Neal. All right, Shaquille O'Neal declared essentially that what Draymond did in bringing his foot up is not anything that's, you know, that's unusual. It's not something that has never been seen before. He said it's called flailing. He knows he's being fouled, and he's just throwing his limbs around to make sure that the referees do indeed see that he is being fouled. Kind of not exactly a flop that a defender would do, but just an over-exaggeration of how much he was impacted by a foul that an offensive player would do. This is what Shaq said.
It's called flailing. Players do it to sell the call to the officials to try to get the whistle. Once you flail, once you tell yourself I'm a flail, it's kind of hard to stop it in a minute. So he flailed. He did kick him, but I don't think he did it purposely.
I got to tell you, I have already declared my views on this, that I think Draymond Green did indeed intentionally kick him because it's too coincidental for him to have done it twice in two games for me to buy coincidence as the answer. So I've already said that, but being a responsible, reasonable person, I do hear Shaq. I do hear Shaq, and he's right. You know, guys often flail, not just in the NBA either, but just to make sure the ref sees what's going on. You know, I mean, we see this in the NFL sometimes. You'll see a pass rusher trying to turn the edge, and he's getting blocked and locked up by the tackle. And if he's being held, he wants everybody to know it. And that outside arm will be flailing like, hey, look at this. He's holding me. If he can't get to the quarterback in time, he at least wants the call. So there, that does happen. Now, do I buy a flailing leg square in the groin for not the first time, but the second time in two games? I don't know if I'm going to go that far, which is why I still think he needs to be suspended. All right, let's get into this. And, of course, back to the Eastern Conference Finals now. As we welcome back to the program, John Godis of Raptors HQ, which is the Toronto Raptors official website on SB Nation, joining us now before game number 4 of that series right here on The Ticket. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Good to talk to you again. Hey, we have a lot to talk about in the Eastern Conference Finals now that it's a 2-1 series, but everybody's got a thought on what happened last night. First of all, just on the kick, intentional or not, suspended or not.
Yeah, I agree with you that I think it was intentional. I thought that in the moment when I saw it, and on the replay, I think it was even more obvious. I understand the flailing argument, but I agree with you. I think it's just too coincidental that he does it a second time. Whether he's suspended, I think I would lean no at this point. I think the precedent for situations like this is where it really has to be obvious that it's a blatant effort to hurt the guy for him to be suspended, and I don't know if there's enough there. And I think he's done, for his credit, a good PR job over the last 24 hours with his quotes in the media to try to undersell this coincidence from happening. So
yeah, I
would,
think that I think that the fact that we're talking about it happening twice is what maybe to me trumps, so to speak, that great job of underselling that he's doing, and the fact that you know, look, if you don't have a history. If you don't, and he's got more than just a history because of what happened in game two, the fact that he did the same exact thing. He's got more because he's got the second most technical fouls in the league this year behind DeMarcus Cousins. He announced at the beginning of the year that he was setting a significant portion of his paycheck aside so that he could cover the fines for all the technicals he plans to get this year. So when you admit that you are, before the season even begins, that you are planning not to always be sportsmanlike, that you are planning on breaking enough rules that are going to get you tees, when you admit those things, that's a history. And then carry through by getting the second most tees to me, and you're the second highest fined guy in the league, and then you have the first incident and now the second incident, to me I think all benefit of the doubt is lost, and that's why the league has got to act here.
Yeah, I really didn't like it in the moment. I still really don't like it now. I don't know if the league's going to suspend him. I think it's probably a suspendable act if it was on purpose. I guess we'll see probably in the next few hours here.
Yeah, I would imagine by the time we're done at 5 o'clock here, East Coast time, because, you know, they said they would have it by the end of Monday, and I think they mean business Monday. I can't imagine them announcing this at 8 o'clock tonight during the Cavaliers Raptors game. So we'll revisit that. On the flip side, or not on the flip side, but the other part of the story last night is my partner Jim here was talking about earlier. We don't want to get lost in this Draymond story. Is the drubbing that Oklahoma City gave the defending champion Warriors? I believed that OKC would win in Game 3 on their home court, but to blow them out by, I think at one point it was as high as 35, 36, 37. They ended up winning by 29. The way that they did in that second half was just that was something that not a lot of people would have expected. What were your thoughts on why OKC was able to do that last night?
Yeah, I've never seen a team beat up the Warriors like this. This year, maybe even last year as well. They just got everything going at the same time. I thought that Westbrook played a very controlled game. He was attacking. He made great decisions. Kevin Durant's just a world beater. I think he can score on anybody on that Warriors team. And the Warriors kind of spent a lot of it looking apathetic after the Draymond foul. I think they, you know, let OKC go on a 22-5 run or something like that. Yeah. By that point, it was pretty much over. So, the Warriors are going to have to show a little bit more fight here. You know, they're down 2-1 in the series. Just because they won 73 games this season, it's not going to be a cakewalk through the playoffs. And, you know, assuming it's the Cavs in the finals, I don't know if we've ever seen a team overcome as much in such a short period of time. If OKC were to win this series, then the Thunder have beating the Spurs, if they beat the Warriors, and then going on to play the Cavs. That's just a tremendous run by the Thunder team. So credit to them.
Yeah, they scored 45 points in the third quarter, did the Thunder last night against the defending champions, which is just absolutely incredible. All right, let's get to the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals now. Now that we've got ourselves a series, this is not unexpected for me, because I predicted, and I don't know if I talked to you specifically about this last time we spoke before the start of the series, but the question was, will the undefeated Cavaliers in the playoffs continue to be undefeated and have their third straight sweep? And I predicted that it would probably be five, and I think if Toronto is to get one, it's going to be in game three. They did. So from my standpoint here in Ohio, I'm not panicking. This is according to plan. Cavaliers regroup tonight and win game four and then finish it out at home. Up there in Toronto, I'm going to assume it's not quite the same thought process. Do you think that the win in game three is enough to inspire Toronto, the Raptors, into thinking, we're good enough to beat this team? We beat them 2 out of 3 in the regular season anyway, and this is our series to lose now.
Well, the Raptors need a lot of things to go right, I think, to win games in this series, and they kind of got it all going in game three. They got at least 50% shooting from both Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. They got at least two of the big three for the Cavs playing, you know, having off nights. Kyrie was pretty off with his shot all night. Kevin Love wasn't much of a factor. So, you know, they got things going right. And now in game four, it looks like Jonas Valanciunas is going to return to the action. So the feeling is pretty positive for the Raptors. I think, you know, taking it on a game-by-game basis, this game four is obviously really big for the team. They're all going to be big down the stretch, but you have to get this one. You're not going to win, you know, twice on the road in this series. So getting your big man back, hoping that your stars can repeat their performance, and then playing defense and hoping that the Cavaliers don't rediscover their shot. There's a recipe for success that the Raptors might have found here. I don't know if they can win one on the road in this series still, but I think we're in for a little bit more of an interesting fight than maybe we had before.
Does this is something that my guest, who's coming up after you in about 15 minutes, tweeted about earlier today, but I want to ask your thoughts on it, too, since it kind of impacts both teams. Does the potential return of Valanciunas take time away from Bismack Biyombo? Do you take that beast who is just rolling off the court more? Does he cut into that, or does Dwayne Casey play them together? How does he handle that?
I think the big question mark is how Jonas Valanciunas is going to play when he returns. I think he's not 100% that they're going to play him at some sort of disadvantage here. If he can return and give the team what he was giving at the time of his injury, though, I think he's a much better player on both sides than Bismack Biyombo is. Biyombo is a very strong defensive player. He's always been fantastic this season when he comes in and gets starters minutes. You know, the 26 rebounds in game three was just fantastic, completely unexpected for him. But Jonas Valanciunas gives you a lot more on the offensive end, and that's where the Raptors kind of need the most help. You know, they got 99 points in the win, but that was because their stars both performed well at the same time. Valanciunas is a guy who can bail those guys out. He's active on the glass. He is able to score in the post. Biyombo just isn't able to do that, and he takes possessions where the Raptors can get easier shots at the rim. So it's just that added threat of having somebody on the inside that's so big for the Raptors, I think, because otherwise they're depending too much on a lot of long shots, which just isn't sustainable.
Without going too much into the mental side of this and trying to play the game before the game is played, how much does DeRozan's big game, the 32 that he had, and the Biyombo monster game on the boards? I mean, you know, this is something obviously the Raptors have been waiting for. They really didn't get a lot of that from DeRozan in the Miami series prior until late when they really needed it in that series in game 6 and 7 when he found his shot. So mentally, again, without overstating it, you know, where is he? Where are they? Can they count on that, do you think? Does he feel like this is what I can do every night? Or is that the outlier, game three the outlier, and what we saw in games 1 and 2 are going to be more of the rule?
I would tend to say no at this point. I think we've seen now that DeRozan can have long stretches of being successful when he's guarded by J.R. Smith. When the Cavs have switched LeBron onto him, it's been a completely different story. I think LeBron can force DeRozan away from his spots. He's obviously bigger and stronger, and he can force DeRozan to do what he wants. But that exerts LeBron's efforts on the other end. And, you know, he played 39 minutes in game three. They're asking a lot of him right now. And from the comments from Tyronn Lue after that game, they're going to be asking more of him in game four. For the Raptors, I think you can expect DeRozan to, you know, put up a lot of shots. Whether he's going to make all of them is, you know, it's a question mark. But it really depends on who he's being guarded by. And in game three, we saw plenty of examples where the Raptors were able to work him off screen, able to get him working in a bit of space. And when he was guarded by J.R. Smith, I think Smith just made too many mistakes in that game. And DeRozan was able to capitalize on it. So I don't see why that wouldn't be sustainable.
We are talking Eastern Conference Finals with John Godis of Raptors HQ, which is the Raptors official site on SB Nation. Dwayne Casey got hit with $25,000 for criticizing. It is kind of odd. I think
right.
It's pretty rare that you criticize officials enough to get fined after a victory, let alone a playoff victory. But that's exactly what happened. He's complaining about the number of foul calls. He's talking particularly about calls against Biyombo or calls that weren't made against the Cavaliers for fouls on Biyombo. Is there a feeling in the Raptors organization that they're getting hosed in this series? And I ask that on two fronts, the KC fine of $25,000, but also because I've been monitoring Twitter and looking at a bunch of Raptors fans, and they've been complaining about foul disparities throughout all three games, as if that is the and even resorting to the old, the NBA doesn't want the Raptors in the finals because it wouldn't be good for ratings. You know, nobody cares about Toronto. They need to have the stars like LeBron in the finals, as if the whole thing is rigged. Is there any kind of a feeling like that among the organization or among the city?
I think that's patently false from my perspective. I think games 1 and 2, they just got clean beat up by the Cavaliers, and the refs were not a factor in those two games. When you look at game 3, though, I think it's a bit of an interesting case because LeBron was trying to sell foul calls for most of the night. And LeBron gets a lot of the calls that he's supposed to get because he embellishes a little bit, because he makes sure the refs see what the contact is and where it is. The Tristan Thompson elbow was kind of an outlier there, but when LeBron actually did get fouled, they were usually him getting fouled. He was just embellishing to make sure the refs blew the whistle. I think the refs kind of need to do that on their end. You know, Kyle Lowry is a tremendous actor. He had one where he got picked off by Iman Shumpert and then kind of jumped at nothing and got called for an offensive foul. So he's always been kind of good at that, but the Raptors need to play this game too. And if they want to get the whistle inside, Bismack Biyombo needs to put a little bit of graciousness aside and or put his pride aside a little bit and maybe embellish the context so the refs are seeing it. There's no prize for being, you know, the most prideful guy out there. If you want to embellish the contact and make sure the refs see it, I think you have to do that at this point, because there's going to be a disparity otherwise, because the Cavaliers have a lot of smart players and they know how to make the refs see the contact.
You know, it's interesting because, again, reading some of the Raptors fans, who, and many of whom are much less gracious than you just were, very bitter in saying that the officials are behind this, you know, and clearly they're either not watching the game or they just don't want to admit what they're watching, and that is the fact that the Cavaliers went to the rim mercilessly in those first two games. And when you're attacking the rack as much as they are and did, you're going to draw a lot of fouls, and the Raptors were jump shooting mostly, and you are not going to get to the line very often because not too many guys are getting fouled on those kinds of things. But LeBron is the question, and some of the folks that I was interacting with on Twitter from Toronto are saying that, does he or does he not get superstar calls? Doesn't a superstar get more calls than a regular player in the NBA? You have to admit that, blah, blah, blah. LeBron James is only averaging 5.9, so let's just say 6 free throws a game. That's 3 fouls, 3 shooting fouls per game, which is well below his career average and well below the average of other superstars in this league. In fact, it's second lowest among players averaging over 20 points and playing some 35 minutes a game. He's not getting a lot of calls in this series. And in fact, what was ironic about the Toronto fans and Dwayne Casey complaining about it is the fact that LeBron, about a week ago, was saying during some of his media sessions that he doesn't know what a foul is anymore. He doesn't understand what it's going to take because he's not getting the calls that he feels he should be getting. And when you go to the rack as often as he does, you'd think he should be shooting more than 6 free throws a game.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say with LeBron. I think because he's the focal point, there are going to be 2 or 3 times a game where he embellished the contact, and that's all Raptors fans are going to see when they look back in their mind's eye at the game. But I invite people to look at Game 3, watch the film again, and look at DeMar DeRozan's highlights. Look at the calls that he got, 8 of 9 from the free throw line. He's adept at drawing fouls just like LeBron James is. And when he drives to the basket, he makes sure that the big guys give him a little bit of contact. When the whistle's going his way, he gets to the line just as the same as LeBron James would. Raptors fans can sometimes have an inferiority complex with the superstars, but their strong players in DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry typically get the calls they should over, you know, a big sample size for the Raptors, which is part of why those two guys are so successful, because they can get to the free throw line. Now, like we talked about earlier, there are other guys on the team who could do a better job of making the refs see the contact, making sure that they get to the free throw line. And Biyombo is probably one of those players because he does draw a lot of contact on the inside because the Cavs are so focused on keeping him off of the offensive or defensive rebound. So that, I think Dwayne Casey was just playing a little bit of the Phil Jackson game and talking about this, making sure every single point that he made was about the referees, just so that it's in their mind head into this game 4 tonight about, you know, what they should be watching for. Whether that's a valid thing that a coach should be doing or not is up to, your listeners. But I think that was just a bit of gamesmanship on his part.
Yeah, and that's probably the case. Last thing, and we'll talk about the inferiority complex for a moment, from the Raptors and whether or not they speak for the city. I wish we had been able to talk after game one, because the Raptors, whoever handles their Twitter feed, sent out a tweet in response to the Cavs fans in Cleveland chanting USA, USA, that said, stay classy, Cleveland, or stay classy, or something like that, and then it said hashtag USA, USA. That tweet was subsequently deleted. Is there a problem when you've got a team whose city or franchise, I guess, who maybe as a franchise or as a city, they're making this kind of territorial by saying we the North? Isn't that the phrase, the we the North for Toronto this year? And they're kind of making it like we, the north of the border. It is Canada against a U.S. city. And so if the U.S. team is winning and having fun and the fans are chanting USA, USA, is that a foul? Is that out of bounds?
That's an interesting question. I think the We the North was actually a pretty smart marketing campaign because there are fans outside of the Toronto market. You know, similar to myself, I'm out of Winnipeg, and I've been following the Raptors for 10, 15 years. There's fans all over the country, and there is that sense of pride that we're all from the same country and we're cheering for one basketball team, which is kind of a cool thing in professional sports. The USA chant, I think, is kind of funny from my perspective. I don't know if I would call it out directly at this point because it happens so much. Because, you know, all these guys, all these players are pretty much American except for, you know, one Canadian who plays on the Raptors and Corey Joseph and one who plays for the Cavaliers and Tristan Thompson. Pretty much all these guys are Americans anyway. The Raptors have made
their
marketing.
Yeah, but of course, you know, when a fan base starts doing that, it's not at the other team's players and where they're from. It's, hey, we're the fans. It's kind of like in a high school football game. You know, I mean, you know, we got spirit. Yes, we do. We got spirit. How about you? It's taunting the other fans. We're from the U.S. You're from Canada. We're winning. You're not. They're going at each other's fans, not at necessarily the players and where they're, you know, because for crying out loud, as international as the NBA is now, there's so many European players, South American players, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody cares where they're from. It's just that, hey, we're an American city. You're a Canadian city. We're winning. You're not. USA, USA. You know, which is no more harmful than We the North, We the North.
Yeah, and I wouldn't make that a thing. You know, if I were running that Twitter account, I wouldn't feed into that at all. I think that it is. You play the games, and you can, you know, say whatever you want after it's over. You know, there are outspoken players who are not on either of these two teams who would make a much bigger deal out of some of these games than the players at hand are. So you win and you can say whatever you want. I think the Raptors fans have made a nationalistic pride out of their marketing campaign.
Yeah,
I think
and there's nothing wrong with that, John, and I don't mean to interrupt, but we got to rush here because we're already way late here. As you go, and thank you, by the way, you're a stand-up guy. I always enjoy talking to you. After tonight, 3-1 or 2-2?
Yeah, man, I'm on the fence about this one. I'm going to say 2-2, but okay. I think this is going to be close.
That's all I needed to hear. John called it 2-2, and we'll talk to you probably toward the end of the series, which I hope is about two games from now, okay?
Sounds good.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. All right, John Godis, Raptors HQ, for part of SB Nation. We'll get the Cavaliers side of things here as we talk to Rick Nolan right after this on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The win. It's a bucket and a foul. Here's Westbrook. Here is Green blocked by Durant. Durant for three. Westbrook for three of the series. Westbrook knocked it down, but they are getting dismantled here. Green putting a move on Adams, and he is fouled.
And down goes Adams once again. He's been living on the floor throughout the first three games.
It's the leg, guys. Watch the leg.
Oh my God.
Follow through on the foot gets you in trouble every time.
And that's the second time that Green, and let's say inadvertently.
What happened with the one with Draymond Green when he apparently kicked you?
That's exactly what happened before, mate. He's pretty accurate, that guy. So, yeah, mate, so, yeah, we'll see.
Steven, I'm
listening
to Kickstart, you guys. Sorry.
No, here we go with the.
I'm sorry. I said it without
someone
even
with a pun. Unbelievable.
I thought it was inadvertent. There's contact on the play. I was shocked they even looked at it. I mean, there's inadvertent contact all the time on plays, so that really surprised me.
Would you be stunned, or would you think it's unfair if the NBA does look at that as a possible suspension?
Oh, I would think they would rescind it.
Sure, you want to have kids one day. I'm not trying to end that on the basketball court. That don't make sense. I brought the ball over the top this way. He fouled me. My leg went up. I mean, I know my court not strong enough to stop my leg halfway from wherever it was going. Like, I didn't know I hit him. Like I said, I thought it would get rescinded because I didn't, not trying to kick him. I was following through on the shot. My leg went up. No, I don't think I'll get suspended. I don't know how anyone could possibly say, you know, I did that on purpose.
I haven't seen it, but I think it's intentional. And that's two times in the last two games. Can't keep kicking somebody and, you know, in their private areas. He probably said he didn't do it on purpose, but I think the way I look at it, it looks intentional to me.
It's called flailing. Players do it to sell the call to the officials to try to get the whistle. Once you flail, once you say to yourself, I'm a flail, it's kind of hard to stop it in mid-air. So he flailed. He did kick him, but I don't think he did it purposely.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
My, oh my, do we have ourselves a situation here. The situation out in Oklahoma City last night got out of hand, and it got out of feet, too, and I didn't mean that as a pun. By the way, Jim, did you hear Stephen Adams closely when he was asked about that, and the female reporter said something to the effect of, do you think that is what kick-started you guys into the gear or
that's
whatever?
That's exactly why I played it.
And then he said, we're starting
Stephen
with a pun.
He had fun with that.
Yeah, and he said, we're starting with a pun or something like that. Then he says either unbelievable or he says pun-believable. I couldn't tell if he actually said pun-believable. If he did, he is my new favorite guy ever.
I'm going to go back and listen to it again, because I couldn't
tell
either.
I've never heard pun-believable before. You heard people say very punny or something if somebody uses a pun like that. But I think this guy said pun-believable. He is a very, very interesting character to listen to watch play, and to kind of learn about. A fascinating story that's developing in this postseason. Of course, what was most fascinating in this last game was not positive for him, and that is him getting kicked in the groin for the second time now by Draymond Green. And we're waiting for the NBA to make a decision. We're waiting to find out if they're going to suspend him for game four or not. And it's a very, very big deal if indeed he is suspended, because it is a must-win game for the Warriors in Oklahoma City to avoid going back to Golden State, to Oakland, down 3-1 and needing to beat a very talented Thunder team three straight times to advance to the finals. So really, really interesting development here. All right, joining us now to talk all things NBA and also, of course, game number four in the Eastern Conference playoffs, or in the Eastern Conference final, beg your pardon, between the Cavaliers and the Raptors, is our good friend Cavaliers beat writer Rick Nolan joining us once again here on The Ticket. Hey, Rick, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. We got a lot to talk about today.
We do. Let's start right there. Intentional or not in your mind?
I've gone back and forth on this, Bob, and I'm not trying to straddle the fence. He has a history, but Stephen Adams is no angel either. I really don't know. I don't think he's going to get suspended, because I don't think that you can read his mind and show there's intent there, I guess. Although that kick certainly seemed to pick up speed as it neared its target. But if you do that and then the same thing happens on a kick out three-pointer and it lands in that area, what do you do then? The NBA
don't you think,
is
though,
just
Rick, that if it just happens on a kick-out three-pointer like that once, it's like, man, that's an unfortunate accident. Look where that hit, boy. But if it happens twice in two games, back-to-back games, that's when you start to lose, in my mind, you start to lose benefit of the doubt. If I'm judging Draymond Green here, and I'm nobody's judge, but he doesn't get that benefit of the doubt for me, because he just did the same thing, in the previous game. Once is an accident, twice is too much for me to buy.
You know, a lawyer could take that logic there and say that that proves the point that it was an accident. It's a motion he always makes, and that this one just happened to, hurt a little more. I don't know. I'm glad I'm not the NBA. They're in a no-win situation with this one, Bob. Three quarters of the country is going to think that they want to make sure, do everything they can to make sure the Warriors get a chance to get back to the finals if they don't suspend him. If they do suspend them, then they've kind of rendered they've really effectively decided game four, I think, because I don't think Golden State can win without Draymond in Oklahoma City. That shouldn't be the NBA's concern.
No, it shouldn't.
But, they they also have the whole Dante Jones suspension, which could not have come at a worse time for them because they did it, you know, a day previous.
Right.
The big difference being, though, that Dante Jones was a seldom-used player. That game was over. The final seconds were ticking off, and you could easily read intent into that play because it almost seemed like that's what he was sent out there, or that's what he sent himself out there for to do.
Yeah, I would be real careful on that because I hope that's not a narrative, because I cannot imagine in a million years. I mean, not that I know Tyronn Lue very well, because I don't, but I can't imagine he would have been sent out there to send a message.
Correct,
to Ambo.
Correct.
If he may,
but
have
I think
just,
it was a,
you know,
it was a Dante Jones message sender on his own, and I think you really got to be strict on those. This, you know, this Draymond Green thing was a second quarter incident. This was an end of game, game over.
Right.
Situation where people shouldn't have been playing, you know, the clock was being allowed.
Let me ask you this, Rick, about going back to the Green thing and the NBA's, you know, difficult situation here. And I don't know if I'll call it loose, but I certainly hope they're not considering, you know, the factor that Green's absence would play on the deciding of this series potentially. Because, A, he was there in the first three, and they lost two of them, one of them convincingly, and one of them on their own home floor, even without the two OKC stars having big games. They shot a combined 33%, and Draymond Green wasn't the difference maker in those two losses that they had. But second of all, I hope they aren't doing that, because then I would have to ask them this. Would they make the same decision here if it had been Kevin Durant guarding Draymond Green on that play and he got kicked in the same place, particularly if it was two times, one in game two and one in game three? If an NBA star guarding Draymond Green gets kicked there, I promise you they're suspending him. They're suspending him in a New York minute, but because Steven Adams is this curious other kind of creature, it's suddenly what, less damaging or less offensive, less a flagrant foul because
right.
It's him. I mean, if this was Durant who got kicked, can you imagine what they'd have done?
Yeah, you know, to the NBA's credit, throughout the last 20 years, they've been pretty consistent in not worrying about the effects of the suspension. I mean, there was a few years back they suspended half the Phoenix team, I think, and then the New York team in a series, guys inadvertently walking a few feet off the bench
during
an altercation. So they've been steadfast and adamant in that. This one, though, is kind of a unique animal. I just don't know. If Durant, let's bring up what you just brought up. If Durant had done this to Draymond Green, would there be nearly the cry for a suspension as there is because it happened the other way around?
Well, I would offer two qualifiers before I would answer that. One is, did he do it in two straight games? And two, does he have the same reputation that Draymond Green has? And this is a guy who has the second most tees in the NBA behind DeMarcus Cousins. He of that great, wonderful personality. And a guy who basically admitted before the season started, I was reading an article earlier before he came on the air, Rick, in which he admitted that he doesn't plan to follow the rules and he doesn't plan to be sportsmanlike, and he set aside a portion of his new contract to pay all the fines for all the technicals he planned on getting this year. So when you admit that, you know, you kind of premeditate that I'm not always going to follow the rules and I'm not always going to use great judgment and I'm going to do what I do and be prepared to pay for it, again, you're removing benefit of doubt for me, and I can't see that being the case if the roles were reversed and it were a Durant kick. You know, Green has basically established himself as being this kind of a guy.
Well, you know, he has walked right up to the edge, and if that history of walking up to the edge plays any role in him getting a suspension, I'm not going to spend a lot of time feeling sorry for him, because he himself put him in that position by repeated actions.
He will have earned it, definitely.
Yeah, I'm to the point on this, Bob, where, you know, there's going to be people's minds aren't going to change by what the NBA rules. They're just either going to be happy about it or really ticked off about it. I'm to the point now where we're getting close to 5 o'clock here. I hope we get a decision real soon, one way or another. we can just move on and react to it rather than hypothetical about what might happen. We can talk about it all day, and, you know, the NBA has to make a decision, and that's why those get paid the big bucks.
No question.
I'm sure that there's a lot of talk, you know, in those league offices right now, and there's probably not even total agreement in there. But it's going to happen here, hopefully, in the next 40, 45 minutes.
Rick, last thing on this before we get into the Cavs and Raptors. Forget about that one play in what was an otherwise ridiculously easy win for the Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, they were up by about 40 at one point, ended up winning by 28. Could have won by much, much more had they kept everybody in. What do you make of that going forward? I mean, whether Draymond is there or is not there, that is a statement game that I just never thought I would see the defending champions just be toyed with, almost just kind of clowned a little bit in game three of of a conference final.
Never thought I would either. I had spent all day looking forward to that game, and then 5 minutes ago in the first half, it basically was over. I don't know what to make of Golden State right now. They could respond like champions and still ultimately win this series. They could be done. We won't really know until game four. If they go down 3-1, the history's not good there. I did see one interesting graphic last night of the, I think, six worst playoff losses in NBA history. Four of the teams on the losing end came back to win championships. So
that's a pretty interesting stat.
I don't think the fact that they got it handed to them badly, maybe it gets gives them a huge wake up call to return to, they've gone into more of a one on one ball dominant team a little bit over the last couple weeks. Where even Steph, you now see him trying to make a lot more dribble shot creation moves than continued swinging of basketball and movement of players. So maybe that reminds them that, hey, we're not so good that we can abandon the very thing that helped us be so good. That's a pro Golden State way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is, maybe they peaked 65 games into the regular season and spent so much time and effort trying to win 73 games that they're simply a little gassed right now, and the rest of the league has kind of caught up to them, and in Oklahoma City's case, maybe even surpassed them.
I think Oklahoma City's confidence is just absolutely sky high right now. I think they were confident anyway because of the way they handled the Spurs. But coming into this, these are the defending champs, and this is a team that has given them trouble. And the way they've played now in two out of those three games, I don't think they fear them even one iota anymore.
No.
I feel like they feel like they have every bit as right to be in the NBA Finals as Golden State does, and I think that's been very, very clear.
And what they're doing is no fluke. They beat them playing big, early on, and they beat them playing small last night. They're having their way right now, and I don't know. Golden State's got to be scratching their head a little bit on what more can we do. We can't change the way we play, but we're not playing well enough. We might not be good enough to beat this team. I think that thought's at least got to be in their heads right now. It's certainly in mind after watching it.
Give credit to the Thunder in this way, too. If you look at it, I can't remember which announcer it was who said this, but it was during the game, during the fourth quarter, I think, that they said something to the effect of the Oklahoma City Thunder are now 6-2 in their last eight games against the Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs, the NBA's two best teams for the regular season. And not just any regular season, but two of the best regular seasons by record, 73 and 67 wins, that anybody has ever had. And they've won six of the last eight. So there's no fluke happening here. This team is that good and could very well be the Western Conference representative. Let's talk about the Eastern Conference representative. You and I both said if it is to be a five-game series, game three is usually the one to worry about. It usually goes to the home team as they get back on their home court and get enthusiasm and momentum and the fans go crazy. The Raptors got all of that on Saturday. So the question today is do they build on that and make it an even series? Or is that just the one that you kind of expect and the Cavaliers will bounce back and right the ship tonight?
You know, so many things went Toronto's way in game three. And, you know, yet with 7-8 minutes left to go in that game, we're still looking at an 8-9 point game. You know, Kyrie's not going to go 3-19 again. Love's not going to go 1-9. I certainly don't think Bismack Biyombo is going to get 26 rebounds in a game. I think Tristan Thompson will show up.
I'm still in disbelief of 4-for-28 combined for Irving and Love. Wow.
And 1-for-18 in the first and third periods, when they were basically playing primarily with the first unit. Kyrie just played bad, I thought. He shot the ball really, really bad, but I thought he played. Those were shots he was making earlier in the playoffs. He took a few bad ones, but when you're making shots, you know, bad shots are good shots when they go in. When you're missing them, you know, bad shots become even more magnified. But I wasn't, you know, he was just bad shooting the ball wise. I was a little more concerned with Kevin Love's performance because I thought he almost shied away from the moment a little bit. And that when he struggled at the beginning, he just didn't seem to be real assertive or aggressive. And I thought he kind of took himself out of the game by not really competing real hard. Tristan even more so. When your only job on a team is to defend and rebound and your man gets 26 rebounds, you've had a really, really bad night. And he did. There's no two ways about it. I think both players though will come back tonight I see the Cavs winning this game coming home Wednesday and closing it out. It's amazing, you know, none of us really thought they were going to go 16-0 in the playoffs, and everybody thought they were prepared for, you know, okay, it's just one game. But, you know, they lost that game, and all of a sudden, you know, you hear tons of different things about what's wrong with them, play Mozgov, play Mo. Well, you know, the nine guys they're playing have been pretty darn good. I don't see any reason to change the nine guys they're playing. This team's good enough to get it done. They didn't seem to have the want to in game three or the focus, and two stars played very poorly. Yet they didn't get blown out until the very end of that game. That's got to count for something. I think it shows you just how big a margin for error the Cavs have and just how small of one Toronto has, and I think we'll be reminded of that tonight.
We're talking to Rick Noland, who is a Cavaliers beat writer getting ready for Game 4. Obviously, we all are. It's up in Toronto again. DeRozan went off, as he is obviously able to do, you know, aside from all of the things the Cavaliers right. did not do well, as you just kind of outlined, not just the shooting, but decision-making, and in the case of Love, you know, confidence wavering. But, you know, sometimes the other team just does the right things, too. And DeRozan is an all-star for a reason, so is Lowry. You know he's capable of doing that. The question is now, you know, kind of like I said about Oklahoma City's confidence being lifted, do you think Toronto has the confidence, you know what, the heck with these guys. We can beat these guys. We beat them twice in the regular season. We did this. This is ours to lose. We're going to even it up tonight. Or do they feel like, or do you think that maybe deep down they realize that what happened on Saturday was an outlier, that the reality is going to come back and hit them?
You know, only Toronto really knows what they truly think. They certainly are saying the right things, but they have to know that Cleveland's the better team here, that has the better players, that has more experience. I don't think that the Cavs have to reinvent the wheel tonight as far as changes. The one thing I would do, DeRozan has 34 points in the first quarter of the first three games. Mm-hmm. When LeBron guarded him in the fourth quarter of game three, he only took one shot, period. I know it's a lot to ask for LeBron, but I would have him defend DeRozan from the start tonight, take away that quick start, maybe get the Cavs ahead early, and get some momentum going and some doubt on Toronto's part. So I won't be shocked if that's what we see. I think DeMarre Carroll has no real post-up game, so I think JR is okay if he plays him. So that'd be the one thing I looked for from a Cleveland perspective. And I think then from Toronto, if Valanciunas is capable of playing, how do you balance using him correctly and taking advantage of what he might give you offensively while not losing the confidence and aggressiveness in offensive rebounding and defensive rebounding and shot blocking that Bismack Biyombo is giving you? I think that's going to be a key thing for Dwayne Casey if Valanciunas can play tonight.
Great analysis, Rick. Let me ask you one more thing before you go. What kind of an impact, if any, and by the way, I agree with you. I think they win tonight. I think they take the win right back out of the Toronto sales and then finish it out at home. But what kind of a role, if any, do you see the officials having in this thing tonight, given the fact that Dwayne Casey just got a $25,000 fine complaining, which is very rare, complaining about the officiating after a win, but
yeah,
saying that they didn't get enough free throws, that Biyombo got attacked and didn't get calls. And on the flip side, which is very unusual, a lot of people don't realize this when they think about the fact that, generally speaking, the NBA is accused, and rightfully so most of the time, of giving superstars calls that other guys don't get. LeBron James is averaging 5.9 free throws a game in this playoffs. That's not
and
a big number.
He took 17 of those or 19 of those in one game. So.
Yep. And so he's not getting the calls, I mean, you know, throughout the playoffs that he would normally get. I mean, as many times as he goes to the basket, the idea that he only gets fouled three times a game, you know, roughly to go there six times total,
right,
six free throws a game is ludicrous. So he's complaining a little bit, and he said, I think yesterday or maybe it was today, that I'm going to protect myself because he doesn't want to take hard fouls anymore.
Right.
But you got Casey arguing on the other side. So what kind of a role do you think, you know, this plays, and how do you think the officials handle this?
I hope none. I officiate, Bob. I've officiated for 10 years, and I'm usually the last guy to criticize officials at sporting events. But I have to say that in the NBA this year, I've seen more bad officiating than I can recall in a long time. Number one, I see some of the guys out there officiating at this level of the postseason that I'm wondering why they're even out on the court. Two of them last night in the Oklahoma City game, being Tony Brothers and Scott Foster, who literally made three calls in that game last night. One, an overrule that was incorrect overrule on the 24-second shot clock. And two others in areas where, if you know what officials are supposed to be looking at, two others where he shouldn't even have his eyes in order to call that foul. So I hope it's not a big issue. I think the Cavs are strong enough to play through it if it is. I don't think in general whining gets you more calls or less calls. The Cavs didn't attack the basket, let's face it, in game three like they did in the first two games of that series when I think they had 112 points in the paint. They took a lot of jump shots, LeBron included, in that game. So if they pound the ball inside like they do in the first two games, I think they're going to get their trips to the line, and I think they'll get rewarded to it. I think, what Dwayne Casey was complaining about, I really don't know. You know, I thought they let his team be extremely aggressive defending the Cavs inside. So if they're not calling fouls there, I don't know how he could complain that they weren't calling them on Cleveland at the other end. So hopefully, you know, I think the Cavs are the dominant and superior enough team that whatever the officials do subconsciously or don't do, I think Cleveland's going to win this game comfortably regardless.
Good stuff as always, Rick, and I would concur, and I certainly hope that is the case because I don't want to. I can't imagine, you know, what Cavaliers fans who have just been waiting for this preliminary stuff to end so they can get back to the finals and get another shot, a rematch at Golden State. If this thing goes 2-2, what's going to be going through their heads?
Yeah,
looking and panicking and all that stuff.
Is yeah, good. Then we got the this is whole Cleveland mentality taking
right
over again, and oh my gosh. So
yeah, if they go 2-2, my goodness, the nerves are going to be frayed for everybody.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Rick, great stuff as always. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Sounds good.
Thank you, sir. Rick Nolan joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, giving you NBA from all angles, Western Conference, Eastern Conference, Toronto, Cleveland, everything that you can imagine we got for you. The only thing we don't have right now is you. Be a part of the show at 866-240-1065 after we take a timeout for bottom of the hour sports there. And also, how about you keep that number and dial it now, whether you've got something to say about the NBA conference finals or not. How about you use that same phone number I just gave you to score some Mud Hens tickets for Memorial Day weekend? I'll tell you what I've got. I've got two pair for you, all right? I got two pairs of tickets for Mud Hens in Buffalo Memorial Day weekend, one for Saturday the 28th, one for Sunday the 29th. So a pair to both games, your entire days are planned out for you. Spend them at Fifth Third with the Mud Hens and Buffalo. So if you are the 10th caller right now, to 866-240-1065, we'll give you both pairs. Enjoy them from your friends here at ESPN 106.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
First of all, congratulations to Sarayas Shanik of Perrysburg. Shariah just won the two pairs of tickets to go see the Mud Hens on Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, this coming Saturday the 28th and Sunday the 29th, Mud Hens and Buffalo going at it at Fifth Third, and both pairs of tickets to Sarayas. In fact, we'll do it again. I got another pair for each game, so four total tickets, two for each game, coming up that we'll give you before the end of the program here in probably about 10, 11, 12 minutes, somewhere in that neighborhood. So be listening for your cue to call for that. All right, so, Kush, you've heard all of the arguments. Going back now, forget about Draymond Green for a moment or two. We'll just have to wait. I still haven't seen it.
Nor have I. I've been refreshing all afternoon long. I haven't seen anything new either.
Yeah, looking for updates and trying to get some idea of what they might do. You know, Russell Westbrook obviously says, yeah, I think it was intentional. Yeah, there's no doubt about it that he attempted to intentionally kick Steven Adams there, and you can't do it twice with it being a coincidence like that. And you know, a little war of words there is going on with Draymond Green, who says there's no way it was completely accidental. I would never do that to another guy. He's going to want to have kids someday. I'm not going to try to take that away from him for a basketball game, but Westbrook's not buying.
It's called flailing.
That's not Westbrook, that's Shaq. Where's Russell Westbrook for me? Here is and maybe it's not Russell Westbrook. I think all I have here is stuck as Shaq. Let's try it again.
I haven't seen it, but honestly, I think it's intentional. And that's two times in the last two games. Can't keep kicking somebody in, you know, in their private areas. He probably said he didn't do it on purpose, but I think from the way I look at it, it looks intentional to me.
It's called flailing.
Okay, we already heard from you, big man. Now let's hear what Draymond Green said about that again. This is the last I want to have on this because I want to get back to the Raptors and the Cavaliers in a moment.
But sure, he wanted to have kids one day. I'm not trying to end that on the basketball court. That don't make sense. I brought the ball over the top this way. He fouled me. My leg went up. I mean, I can't. I don't think. I know my court not strong enough to stop my leg halfway from wherever it was going. Like, I didn't, honestly, I didn't know I hit him. Like I said, I thought it would get rescinded because I didn't, like, not trying to kick him.
So, Jim, just real briefly on this, as we wait for the NBA to decide whether or not they're going to suspend Draymond Green or not. If you, not just you, but anybody, if you get on our Twitter feed, you're going to want to do that because there is a very, very interesting video that someone has compiled, and I don't know who the someone is because they don't go by their name, but it's on our Twitter feed, and I'm going to try to retweet it if I can. Follow us on Twitter, by the way, at Sports Radio 106.5. So anybody who wants to see, and everybody who wants to see, can see one of the more interesting video compilations that you're going to find because it relates directly to this. Essentially what it portrays, and I'm looking for it again because it seems to have escaped my line of sight here. What it essentially portrays is a handful of other Draymond Green drives to the basket featuring Draymond Green's prodigious right foot shooting up as he finishes plays, especially if there is contact, which would indicate one of two things. that either it is completely accidental and it's just maybe almost an involuntary reflex that he has, that when he encounters contact, that what Shaq called flailing or whatever you want to call it happens, because his leg goes up in just all kinds of odd, strange ways many, many times. That's one. Or the other possibility is that he intentionally is trying to kick everybody. And only once in a while that does he actually connect and get what he wants there, which was, of course, Steven Adams right where he got him. But it's a really, really interesting video. I watched it during one of the timeouts that we took this afternoon. And I'm not going to say it that I'm completely changing my mind, because I still think it was intentional for all the reasons I outlined before. But it's making me think twice about this. This is this cat's style. It's his thing. It's his it's just what he does. He attacks, and when there's contact and he's finishing plays, his right foot goes up into the air as if, I don't know, as if to do what. I don't know what his goal is. I don't know what the point of it is. But what I do know is that it looks awfully, it makes the situation look an awful lot like what Draymond Green says it is. That my leg came up. I didn't intentionally kick him. I don't know why it came up, and it was just unfortunate that it is where it is. You know, he mentioned, look at Russell. Russell Westbrook's foot comes up and kicks out when he shoots a jump shot, you know, like a three. But this might change some minds. Have you seen it, Jim?
I've been perusing it, and it's interesting, you know, how the dynamic in this case works. That it does seem to happen, but I don't know. It doesn't change my opinion, you know, on this. It really doesn't. And I don't care what the Stephen A. said. I think the NBA needs to be consistent on this one. I just still am of that opinion. And if one gets suspended for it, and Draymond Green even commented saying, well, you know, I heard of this Dante Jones incident. I didn't see it, but, you know, he used his fist. I can remember the play because I still remember watching it the other day. They were fighting for a rebound. If I had to take Draymond Green's word, both were incidental, but one gets a suspension. So it doesn't change my opinion,
yeah,
but it's
I
very
still
interesting.
I still can't go there that if one, then the other. I just can't. And as you know, I want to. Because what am I but rooting for the Thunder in this series? I want the Warriors to be disadvantaged. I want Draymond Green to be out. I'm rooting for the Thunder. So this is not biased in any way against that point of view, but I just don't see it. I don't see it because one then the other. To me, it's because one from Draymond Green and then a second from Draymond Green that matters here. That to me is the most important thing. Oh, here's the clip. I found it, and it was retweeted by J.A. Adonde, who was retweeting Sekou Smith. I don't know who that is from the NBA. And it came from somebody on Twitter. I'm going to retweet it right now. I'm going to retweet this right now. So anybody here's the best way to do it. I don't have to tell you who all these other people are. And I'm just going to headline it this. I'm retweeting it from Sports Radio 106.5. So, Jim, you can see it for yourself. It's from Sports Radio 106.5, and the person who runs this web, Twitter feed is called In the Lab, all right? And they tweet from at 10:00 hours. And what they show is, and it says, I actually have 140 clips of him doing this. Sometimes he kicks when no one is there, random forward and backward kicks. And when you play this 30-second vine that he has, you see Draymond Green constantly driving and bringing that foot up in the air like he's trying to kick a field goal. It's impossible to explain, and it's more impossible to see if it's intentional or if that's just what happens, if it's reflexive.
I mean, I just rewatched it again, Bob, and it does seem a little more reflexive.
That's
what I'm
saying.
He's doing it on short jumpers. He's doing it on rebound attempts. He's doing it on
15 seconds halfway through it. Watch the driving layup against.
I was just
the
getting
Blazers
to that
maybe.
One. Yeah. So he's doing
it against the Clippers. It's a driving layup on the right side. He's finishing the layup, and his carry through takes him, of course, as it always does to anybody, past the backboard and to the baseline. And you see, it's his left leg that just comes shooting up into the air in the same kind of kicking way that he caught Steven Adams. Unfortunately, there's nobody's legs wrapped around his foot there, which would, of course, bring contact from foot into groin. It's just so you see it on jumpers. You see it on drives. You see it with his right foot. You see it with his left foot. You see it all of the time. He just shoots, and then the leg shoots up. There's another one. It's a drive on the right side. He kind of makes a move, and this is against the Bulls. No, that's the one before that. I beg your pardon. Anyway, you got to see it for yourself. I can't describe a vine on the radio. It's kind of silly to try. I apologize. But see it for yourself. And see if this, just go to our Twitter feed and follow us at Sports Radio 106.5 and see it for yourself and tell me whether you think it's intentional. Jim, all of the arguments I heard today from Shaq, from Russell Westbrook, from Steve Kerr on Draymond Green's behalf, of course, and from Draymond himself, none of them have been enough to convince me that this wasn't intentional. If I am going to be convinced, it's this video. It's this video of 30 seconds of worth of plays, and whoever put the vine together says there are about 140 clips of him doing this that they have. Whoever, did I just tweet that? Did it go out? Okay, good, because I just closed the window, and I thought, oh, crap, I hope I didn't shut it before I sent it. It just says this. This, if anything, convinces me otherwise, it's this video. Real quick, I don't have a ton of time here, obviously. I didn't really plan to take calls this segment, but let's do it since they're there. Jeff in Bowling Green. Jeff, what do you think, intentional or not?
Well, hey, it just reminds me of the situation when Kobe was smacking people in the face, and he said it was just after he shot the ball. He always does that. I don't believe it.
You don't believe it?
He was beat up by Ginobili, and he smacked him because he was getting mad and upset.
Okay.
So, I think they do it on purpose, a little nudge, a little elbow, a little here and there, and then it's nice to go on the video next night and say, oh, I didn't mean to do that. Yeah, they did.
And this is just for the sake of discussion. I'm not disagreeing with you because I don't know either. But what about the ones, like if you see this video, you see them where there's no one there. There's no one to kick. Oh. There's no one to even – he's just doing it to air. His foot is just shooting up.
Yeah, true. I mean, it could be a reaction, but then when there's someone there – you know, it's going to be a foul or a kick in the private or something. You got to control that, I guess.
Yeah.
Hard to say, Bob. Have a good day.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. That's all I'm looking for. Just looking for an opinion there. That's as good as any. John in Toledo. Hey, John, go ahead. What do you think with this?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, John.
So my main thing was, like, after the fact of the play that happened, like, Draymond's reaction, he didn't seem sympathetic towards, like, what he did to Steven Adams at all. He just kind of, like, tried to defend himself and say, you know, hey, I didn't commit a foul. So, I mean, if it was accidental, you would think he would be a little more sympathetic to what he did.
That's a great point. That is a great point. Even if you didn't mean to do it, you bring that foot up and it happens, and instead you just turn and walk to and go to the line to shoot your free throws. You have to know. You have to feel it on the top of your feet. He says he didn't see it. He didn't realize that the guy had gotten hurt. You have to feel your foot striking another guy like that. You would think
Stop
and turn around and go, oh, my God, are you all right, dude? I'm so sorry.
Right, exactly.
That's a very fair point you make. That's a very fair point. So now,
I'm
going back and I'm wondering whether this is legit or not. What do you think? Is the NBA going to suspend him?
In terms of if I think the NBA is going to suspend him, I have a hunch, despite my opinion, which you've heard, Bob, my hunch is no, they won't.
Mine is too, simply because it's 5 o'clock and we haven't heard. I feel like if they were going to suspend him, it wouldn't have taken this long. They would have said that is a really, really low blow. No pun intended, a low blow. But that really was a cheap shot, and it warrants a suspension. If they go this deep into the night, this deep into the day, I guess I should say, and haven't acted, it means there are a lot of question marks that they have about it. And when there are question marks, generally speaking, they're not going to suspend somebody if they're not certain. If there are question marks, that means no suspension is coming. So that is my gut instinct right now. All right, that's it. All the time we've got. Cavaliers, Raptors, do they win game 4, Jim?
Yes, they do.
Cavs win tonight over the Raptors, and then close it out on, what would it be, Wednesday night? Close it out on
Wednesday
night
game
in
5.
Cleveland, and then it's on for the return trip to the finals. Drive Time is coming up next with Mike Miller. Stay right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.